Now, despite changes to the law, survivors of mother and baby homes are still having difficulty accessing their personal records and information. Others are angry and upset at the exclusion from the state redress scheme. Those are among the findings of the Special Advocate for Survivors, Patricia Carey, following her first 6 months in office. The role covers survivors in places including mother and baby homes, Magdalene laundries and industrial schools. Between the 1920s and the late 1990s, more than 230,000 people spent time in one of those institutions. Patricia Carey is with us in studio. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Getting access to records, it seems that remains a big issue for many people. Why is that?
Well, the simple answer is that there are records still in religious and private ownership. And I think that we know from the recent scoping inquiry that records belonging to or that pertain to individuals must be handed over to the state. There's no reason why any religious order should hold on to records. And it's one of the key themes people have said to me. I want the records that are about me and about the time I spent in that institution. Critically for people, medical records, but also to give them their early life history.
And who's dragging their feet then?
Well, to be honest, I think there needs to be a state response. And I think possibly, again, the scoping inquiry. I mean, we know that the Commission of Inquiry for the Mother and Baby Homes was less than satisfactory, and that's putting it mildly. So I think now the records must be handed over. I had a woman recently who was in five institutions, and she was directed by the state to contact five different religious organisations to receive her records. That's not good enough. Records that pertain to somebody's life must be given to the state so they can be given to those individuals.
We were chatting just before the microphone went live, and you were saying to me that you have been struck by the number of people with whom you've had contact who really want to talk, who've decided that now is the time to talk about what happened to them.
I think so. And I think it's heartening. I think it's a sign that shame around institutionalisation has moved away. But it's also, it's sad that people feel that they can only now come forward and tell their life history. And I spoke to a woman, as I said, in Canada, very isolated, an Irish woman who left shortly after giving birth and her child was taken from her, who said she'd never spoken to her family. So there's a huge desire, and it's one of the things I want to do, is to bring survivors and affected people together who wish to talk, who wish to share their experiences, but also to take the shame away from it. And I think one of the heartening things is the positive response that there's been to the establishment of a National Centre for Research and Remembrance. And I think that will shine a light on Ireland's dark history, but also that it will be survivor-led as to what goes into that museum and archive.
We've just been talking about how much money the government has at its disposal. You also say that there's continuing anger over the exclusion of some survivors from the redress scheme. Will you tell us about that?
So the redress scheme, or payment scheme as it's called, and I think the word payment is problematic in itself, it excludes a vast number of people. So I suppose the one that a lot of people are aware of is 24,000 people who spent less than 6 months in the institution. But equally important are people who were in hospital for long periods of time and then move from one institution to the other. The vast number of private and religious and state organisations such as Temple Hill, West Bank Orphanage and a whole range of institutions that are not covered under the scheme. I would say at least three people a day come to me and talk about the fact that government apologies are hollow when they're told sorry, but not sorry. And redress, it's really important to say, is not about money, but it's a physical manifestation of the state apology. And for people who are told continuously that they're not included, that's a further discrimination against their experience of institutionalisation.
You mentioned that you've had contact with a lot of people in recent months. One of them is Philomena Lee, about whom the film Philomena was made. And it would seem she's among the people having difficulty accessing redress.
So one of the things that has struck me is that we need to put people before the process. And we all know that lots of things have moved online, but I'm really, really conscious about digital poverty and also about the use of plain English. And unfortunately, Philomena's daughter and Philomena made contact with me. And to be honest, it's not about Philomena as her wonderful story was told, or the story of what happened to her, but it's the fact that she was 91 and that she had to continuously log on to an online portal. I've spoken to many people. Now, Philomena has received an apology and I want to acknowledge that, but many people do not have access, being told to upload or scan documents, particularly people who are applying for redress in a hidden way, who don't have access to family members or supporters. So I think that's of grave concern. We need to put people before the process. And if the process isn't working, quite frankly, we need to change it.
Patricia Carey, thank you very much for talking to us this afternoon.